In August of 1945, in preparation for the Nazi war crime trials, the victorious Allied powers, the U.S., the Soviet Union, Britain, and France, produced a document called the London Charter of the International Military Tribunal, which became known as the Nuremberg Charter in reference to the German city where the main trial would take place. Some commentators believe the charter has great relevance for the situation we're now witnessing in Gaza. Richard Drake is a history professor at the University of Montana who recently wrote about the importance of the charter for Counterpunch. He spoke with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg.
So the Nuremberg Charter, the relevance to the situation in Gaza. I mean, some people would say that Nuremberg was winner's justice and they didn't really deal with the Allied crimes, you know, the firebombing of the German and Japanese cities, the dropping of the atomic bombs. So how legitimate can such a charter be, or such an example of putting people on trial be?
I would say all of those criticisms of the Nuremberg Charter are accurate, they're legitimate, but the section of the charter that I cited in the essay that you've read, dealing with crimes against humanity, really is the moral high point of that document. And I think it serves as a model for the kind of thinking we should be employing about war crimes today, and especially with regard to what's going on in Gaza right now. So I think you're right. I mean, there are some flaws in the Nuremberg Charter. Victor's justice is a very accurate way to think of it. But there are elements in it, I think, that rise above the flaws and really have been used, I think, ever since as a kind of exemplary standard for the way we should think about war crimes.
And the section that you're referring to, crimes against humanity, would that conform pretty much to what we think of as international law on that subject?
I think it influenced international law a great deal, especially Article 6 of the Nuremberg Charter and the portion of that article dealing with crimes against humanity really shines a bright light, I think, on the whole question of war crimes and how we should think about them.
And then there are people on the pro-Palestinian side who would say the issue is simple. There is oppressor and oppressed, subjugated and subjugator, colonized and colonizer, and they, the other side, are responsible for war crimes. We are merely engaging in resistance. So how do you respond to that argument?
I think that there is a great deal to be said for that argument. But the point in the Nuremberg Charter that I think is highly relevant today, and especially with regard to Gaza, is that violence of the kind happening in Gaza today against civilians is always immoral, no matter who employs it. And if we follow that principle, the criticism of the Likud government in Israel is understandable, but also the attack on Israeli civilians on October 7th also would be ruled out by the logic and the ethical standards employed by the Nuremberg Charter. And I think that's a legitimate point, that civilians should not be targeted in the way that they are being targeted in Gaza right now by Israel, or the way they were targeted by Hamas on October 7th. Both of those actions would be proscribed by the Nuremberg Charter, Article 6, Crimes Against Humanity section.
Yeah, I think what Hamas has said is, well, we didn't set out to kill all those people. We just wanted the hostages. Do you think that has any validity? Or doesn't it matter because they killed all those people?
And if we follow the language of the Nuremberg Charter, it's a remorselessly unforgiving language that we find there. Civilians, children, women, old people, they are to be protected from the kind of violence that is coming from both, that came from both sides on October 7th, from the Palestinian side, Hamas side, and ever since then from the Israeli side. Violence against civilians is always wrong. That's the argument of the document. I think it's a principle that deserves to be honored.
It's a slightly different but related subject, what do you make of the way the Biden administration is handling this? They do seem to make statements about protecting civilians, but how serious is that if they're so supportive of Israel?
Not very serious, in my view. I think that the administration has made a tragic mistake, a tragic miscarriage of justice and ethics and mercy by going along with the terror bombing of Gaza. Just how I see that activity right now. You cannot be dropping 2,000-pound bombs on refugee centers full of small children and expect the world to applaud you and to think of you as a defender of democracy and liberty and freedom, which is what we're trying to claim we're doing. I think it's an absurd argument. I think it's going to backfire on us. And all over the world, and particularly the global South, the negative reaction to American policies in supporting Likud in Gaza is really generating a lot of blowback. It's a famous term that Chalmers Johnson used in his marvelous blowback trilogy of some years ago. It's so much of the terrorism that the United States faces in the world, Johnson argued in those books, really comes from blowback to our own policies. I think this is a very important way to think about the problem of terrorism in the world today.
Yeah, I guess some people like Noam Chomsky would even argue that the number one terrorist is the U.S. and not those other countries.
His colleague, man with whom he wrote many books over the years, Edward Herman, I don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah, sure. Manufacturing Consent, yeah.
Yeah, and they wrote a Manufacturing Consent is a great book. Another book that Herman wrote that really comes to mind as you raise his name was The Real Terror Network, a book he wrote in the early Reagan years, the early 1980s. The role of the United States, he was particularly interested in the CIA and the nefarious work that the CIA conducted worldwide, undermining governments, sowing the seeds of terrorism worldwide. That's a powerful book, and I think a very legitimate argument that he makes in there about a major source of terrorist activity in the world comes from our side.
Do you remember in 1965, the Suharto coup in Indonesia, and 500,000 people were killed, and that was with CIA complicity, with the Nuremberg Charter cover complicity as well as the actual killing?
The book to be read on that subject is Vincent Bevins's The Jakarta Method. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I haven't heard of that. Okay.
Years ago, in which he analyzed that tragic event and emphasized the crucial role that the CIA played in supporting the murder of over a million people.
It was not 500,000. It was over a million.
According to Bevins in his book, which I recommend all your listeners to read that book. It's a powerful study about really this whole blowback idea that many of our policies have been undertaken in such a way as to generate hatred of the United States worldwide. And we really need to address those causes of terrorism, those domestic causes of terrorism, in addition to being concerned about groups like Hamas and ISIS, we have our own problem within, domestically, internally, on this question of terrorism. And the Jakarta Method really zeroes in on this issue of Indonesia and what happened there in the mid-1960s. It really was a culminating example of CIA intervention that really began in 1953 in Iran.
Was it in Greece even earlier in the 40s?
I think came later. Well, there was an earlier episode, but then in 1967 with the colonels, that was another example of America supporting right-wing reactionary governments. Mm-hmm. Any government was okay so long as it protected the corporate capitalist system.
And it was anti-communist. Yeah.
But there was a series of episodes engineered by the CIA. Operation Ajax in Iran, 1954 in Guatemala, That was another major case of United States interference in the democratic politics of foreign countries, something we have been quite vociferous in our accusations against Putin for doing. But we've done plenty of this ourselves. And Indonesia was yet another one of those events. Iran, Guatemala, Indonesia, Greece, and other places as well. But we have a very shabby record in that department.
And I recall Indonesia as well killed off, I think, a third of the East Timorese population. Not too much publicity here about that.
No, that's been safely buried.
Yeah.
We don't look at ourselves in the mirror. That's one of the great critiques of Chalmers Johnson, the great University of California, Berkeley political scientist. In addition to the books we've already mentioned by the Blowback trilogy, his last book, the book he wrote the year he died, I think he died in 2010 or 11, but the last book he wrote was called Dismantling the Empire. And he meant dismantling the American empire, which is global, and it is defended by 800 military bases worldwide. And his argument was, until we come to terms with that fundamental imperialist problem of our own, we are on the same path. And he actually uses this example, this historical example. We are on the same path that ancient imperial Rome took to its decline and fall, the great study by Edward Gibbon, which Chalmers Johnson cites at great length in the second volume of the Blowback trilogy. There's a parallel, there's an historical parallel between what we are doing now in the 20th and 21st centuries and what ancient imperial Rome did 2,000 years ago. And the end will be the same. It will be the same unless we take action against the status quo. Problems of terrorism, problems of imperialism, colonialism, all of these problems are propelling us down the road of catastrophe. And I'm afraid what's happening in Gaza right now, as we speak, is an illustration of that tragedy.
Yeah, I often think of the U.S. as the modern Rome, but some of that is because we have a Senate and they put a lot of stock in their Senate. I think the Senate is the only institution in the government, or according to the Constitution, that can't be abolished. Well, although it doesn't say so explicitly, that's what it amounts to.
Sometimes they get a pretty good impression of abolishing themselves.
Yeah.
Because of their active role in furthering the business of the country.
What do they say? That's the place where the bills go to die.
Indeed.
That's University of Montana Professor Richard Drake speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on November 21st, 2023.